Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
He's here once again, David Coleman. How are you, David?
I'm good, thank you.
Good to
who's here?
Good to have you with us. And we're still asking people to get in touch. Text on 51551. We'll get straight to it because we've loads and we have a good bit of time. So let's try and get to as many as we can. So my 3-year-old says this listener has a great personality and is really caring, but my husband works away 3 days a week. And sometimes when he's home, my son is all about him. But as time goes on, he just wants me. So he doesn't want daddy to come to the activities. He wants me, mum, to do everything. He got really upset when I gave his dad a hug and a kiss when we were trying to encourage him to give daddy a kiss. And this mother is finding this really hard to navigate. He doesn't want me to go to a Pilates class or have a lie-in on a Saturday, and she just wants advice. So it's a real struggle.
Yeah, and it is difficult. It's difficult, I think, for her son as well, who, of course, being three, isn't going to get this concept of time. So when his dad goes away, it's like he's gone and he doesn't have the same security that his dad is coming back. So the mum knows that he's gone for 3 days of work or 4 days of work or whatever it is. But the three-year-old mightn't. So one of the things that might help would be to do some kind of like a graphic or a picture-based schedule so that he knows and he can count the number of sleeps before daddy comes back. And so that means that, you know, dad is kept in mind during the times when he's away. And then I think it's just about doing kind of what they're doing, which is making sure that dad is just very involved in the days that he's home, that he's available to be involved with his son and doing things with him. And if his son protests, that's okay. You know, I think it's still okay for him, you know, to be there doing the parenting solo while the mom goes off to Pilates. And I think the mom needs to have the confidence that, you know, her husband is going to sort it out, that he's going to be able to stay relaxed enough and stay connected enough to the three-year-old, that they're going to get by and things will be fine. Because I think if the mum also then feels that, oh, you know, well, if he's very upset, if the three-year-old is very upset when I go away and then she lingers and she doesn't want to go away, or she, you know, makes choices that mean that actually she stays around, then of course her son never learns that he can actually be fine and really enjoy the time with his dad as well. So I think there is that little bit of balancing. I wouldn't be overly worried about trying to kind of force the three-year-old to be kind of hugging and kissing his dad. I think that happens naturally over time. I think it'll be great when they don't have this disruption with work, if they can at all move to it. I mean, I think that might be a priority for them over the next number of years, if they can at all look at, you know, job options are there to see, because it's very hard for small kids.
And it's hard for everybody. Yeah. But I get the feeling from that, even though it's not said explicitly, that they might be worried as well about long-term implications for the relationship between father and son. Should they be?
No, I don't think they need to be worried about the long-term implications. I think the key thing for small children is that they have a stable adult in their life, that there is one person there who the child can attach to in a positive way, so that they get this security of attachment, that they can learn to trust in adults. Then that level of kind of trusting relationship is what grows out to lots of other people in their world. So there will always be times for that relationship to rekindle. And I think a lot of people's experience is that boys in particular will be all about their mammies when they're, you know, young and toddlers and preschoolers. And then they move into primary school years, and suddenly it's all about dad, and it's all about everything that dad does, and the need for dad becomes greater. So I think that would probably happen naturally anyway, so I wouldn't be overly worried about a long-term implication.
Now, we have a parent getting in touch who would like some advice on bringing home a newborn baby in a couple of weeks' time. They have an 18-month-old, so they're worried about him feeling left out, I suppose, when this new baby arrives.
Yeah. So again, really common. I think most older siblings do, in fact, feel a certain wrench when a new baby comes home, excited and all as they may be in advance of the baby. But then the reality of it suddenly hits home and there is less time for them. Typically, there is less availability of a parent because naturally you have to give all the time to the new baby and their physical needs are probably greater. So I think some of it is about making sure that they can still prioritize things with their 18-month-old on his. Was it a boy, little boy?
Yes, the 18-month-old. Yes, yeah, he's 18 months. Yeah,
yeah. On his own, so that he gets still that little bit of special time with mammy or daddy, that he still gets time, you know, snuggled up on their knee, having a story read to him, that kind of stuff, because that helps. But also then to see, can he be involved in some elements of the baby's care? So can he be the one to bring the bag of nappies over? Can he be the one to do all those small jobs? And then most importantly, when there are visitors coming to the house, which there probably will be, certainly in the early days, let the 18 18-month-old be the one who invites the visitors to come see his little brother. So
that's the idea.
Who is making this transition so that he's very centrally involved in that, that it's not, again, just about everybody making a beeline for the baby and this 18-month-old practically getting, you know, knocked to the side as they rush, as the aunties and uncles rush to get to the baby's bedside. So, yeah, so I think those are the kinds of things to do. And then just to maintain an awareness over time that it is difficult and it's a difficult transition, but it is a transition. And most kids, you know, they do get through the transition.
Yeah, and then you'll get to a point where you won't even remember having one child.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens.
And unfortunately, your 18-month-old will never know that he had this glorious 18 months. he's too young. You know, 6-year-old remembers what it was like to be an only child and maybe feels the aggrieved sense of the loss for a little bit longer. But an 18-month-old won't
remember.
They'll get over it pretty quickly.
Let's move up then to an anxious teenager. So this parent is looking for advice on what to do for my 16-year-old daughter. She's extremely anxious, sometimes refuses to attend school, has expressed that she hates herself and hates her life. She has meltdowns. She says she can't cope. I've been trying to teach her coping skills, resilience, helping her to build up her confidence. I've also encouraged her to talk to a school counsellor or a GP, but she refuses to. I believe she needs medication and therapy, but she won't attend. And they end by saying, should I force her to have therapy?
So you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And so they could probably force her to get into the therapy room with whatever counsellor they can find. But I think the dilemma then will be that their daughter still may just dig her heels in and decide that she's just not going to engage. So no, you can't force her to accept therapy. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, from the mom's point of view, one of the things as well, that if her daughter knows that she thinks that she needs therapy and medication, that might be part of the block, that maybe the daughter feels she's been pushed down a very particular kind of route with regards to kind of sorting this out or helping herself. And so I think that might be part of it, maybe to, from the mum's point of view, be a little bit more open about the potential for not both necessarily, maybe one or the other, or even just, you know, that actually there might be other ways to support her. And so maybe there are people outside the family, the immediate family, who still act as a mentor, who could take on the role to talk to her anyway. Not that it's a formally arranged thing, but just if she has an auntie, for example, who's always had a bit of a special interest in her, could the auntie maybe take her out for, you know, an afternoon of shopping or, you know, a coffee or something? And again, just talk to her, not just about, you know, the struggles she might be having with school and the anxiousness that she feels, but also about how does she see that panning out? How does she see that developing or improving or changing? Or does she? And, you know, has she herself ever thought, are the things that she might want to do? And so that might be the missing piece in terms of that teenager's voice actually being heard about how does she think her issues are ever going to be resolved, if they're ever going to be resolved, and is she in any way invested in resolving those issues? Because that's the bit that needs to happen for therapy to be effective. That, you know, that 16-year-old needs to kind of take some responsibility for the fact that, look, this is where my life is at and I don't fully understand why it's like this, and yet I would like it to be slightly different and I would like it to improve. And then that's when the therapy will be really effective.
Because sometimes, I mean, parents, we just want to fix things, don't we?
We always want to fix things.
And we want to fix them quickly. And that might not be the best strategy.
Well, I think, it is a dilemma, because then what we end up doing, of course, is offering all this unwanted advice. And I think I've said it many times, probably, the listeners might be even sick of me saying it, but, you know, unasked for advice is almost always unwelcome. And so that might be the other thing that's happening as well, that if this is a mum who's constantly saying, you know, do this, do that, do the other, you know, because the mum has said that she's tried to help her with mindfulness and lots of other strategies to help. And so again, you might just have a teenager now who's just really resistant to her mum in particular.
So you need somebody
again,
else.
Maybe a different voice might help her just kind of realise for herself, actually the stuff I can do and need to do.
Okay, we have a 7-year-old now and a parent looking for advice on this. And they sound pretty desperate because they said, could you please, please give some advice for a 7-year-old boy who needs to wear a nappy at night? He's embarrassed now. He's got a 3.5-year-old sister who is out of night nappies. So you can see already the dynamic in the family. Yeah. And he's getting really angry with his little sister when she says it to him when they're getting ready for bed.
Okay.
Any help at all? Now, I don't know whether they're asking you to help to sort of end the nappy wearing situation for this child, or how do they deal with the problems it's throwing up?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, hopefully they'll have been to their GP if he's 7, just to check to make sure that there's nothing physical that's leading to the nighttime enuresis, which is bedwetting. And if that's all okay, then there are things that they could try. So if they haven't yet tried the pants that have the alarm system in them, that tends to be more effective than lots of other situations.
I haven't heard of those.
Yeah, so they're like just regular pants that a child would wear, underpants, but they have a sensor in them. And so as soon as the child starts to wet, an alarm goes off, wakes the child, and then they can go to the bathroom so that they never have this kind of full flood of wee in the bed. That's the theory of them, of course. Mm-hmm. And so what it does is it allows the child to learn the signals that they're getting from their body, which is typically what they miss if they're very deep sleepers, and so they don't get the signal that their bladder is full and they need to go to the bathroom. So that might be an option for them. The other thing I think is make sure now, you know, that the 3.5-year-old and the 7-year-old are not near each other when they're getting ready for bed, so the 7-year-old has a bit of privacy. If he does need the nighttime pull-ups for himself, you know, that's okay if that's the way that saves them all the hassle of cleaning sheets and all the other things that are important in families to keep life going smoothly. Just let him have his privacy so that he doesn't have his sister aware that he's still wearing these things. And so, you know, that would be something that I think might make a difference if they have the space. Of course, that's assuming that they're not all cramped into one small space.
If they can keep them apart.
Yeah, just to give him a bit of privacy. And I think that might then relieve some of that kind of sibling tension, because I'm sure he does feel very self-conscious in front of his little sister, particularly if his little sister is going, but why is, you know, Paul still wearing whatever, you know, is he not big enough? And
I know it's a normal thing. She's only three and a half. What about lifting the child when they're sleeping? You know, midnight lifting.
Yeah, it's not going to get over the nappy issue. And it typically tends to be not as effective in terms of the child learning for themselves that they have this fullness, that they need to go to the bathroom, because you as the adult take that responsibility away. Now, for a lot of families before, there were nighttime pull-ups as a kind of a common thing. I think it was the thing that kept most families sane, because it meant that they didn't have a wet bed every morning to try and change and all the other bits associated with that. But it's not so effective in terms of helping a child to learn the signals, because that's typically what they need to do. It's that they haven't made this connection between the sensation of fullness and the need, therefore, to wake themselves up, that they don't have that kind of consciousness. And that's what the alarm system does.
Okay.
It just, because as soon as they feel that fullness, they're about to wee, bing, you know, it goes straight off. And certainly parents wake up anyway. So if nothing else, a parent gets up and moves the child to the bathroom.
But you want the GP to be involved here as well, just to make
just
sure,
to be sure if they haven't already been
wrong. Yeah. Okay, let's come to this one. This is an 11-year-old girl who's being excluded by friends. My 11-year-old girl has been friends since birth with another girl who lives on our road. They were great friends. They were joined at the hip for 10 years. Now, a new girl has moved into the estate, and those two girls are excluding our listener's daughter. They're not including her in activities. Generally, they've been a bit mean, saying mean things, whispering about her when she isn't there. The other girls both have phones, but my daughter doesn't, and she won't have one until she goes to secondary school. She accepts that, but it's difficult. How can I help her navigate this?
Really, really difficult. And I think it is exactly that kind of situation that lots of children will have experienced when a third person comes into a dyad. Suddenly you have three people and three is company, you know, where are two is company, where three becomes a crowd. And so it often happens that children will split off. And it sounds like, you know, the fact the other two girls do have their phones, that's the kind of thing that keeps them connected. Mm-hmm. It may be that the new girl who's come in has also made her decision about who she wants to be friends and is also maybe possibly changing the dynamic and actively trying to exclude the third girl. I would suggest that this mum goes and talks to the parent of the long-standing friend and says, I'm not sure if you're aware, this is what's happening. Of course, you know, my daughter doesn't have her phone yet, or doesn't have a phone yet, and it's not a priority for us. And yet this is the dynamic. This is what's actually happening. You know, would you be willing to talk to your daughter to help her recognize that this is what's happening? And if there's some other issue that I need to be aware of in terms of, you know, some friendship problem that had emerged prior to this new girl coming in, you know, well and good. But otherwise, you know, can you talk to your daughter?
Now, you might get the door slammed in your face if you go to have that conversation.
But they've been friends since birth, according to this. So that's 10 years where the two families were probably quite connected, where the two girls were coming in and out of each other's houses because it was all on the estate. So I don't imagine that the parents don't get on. It would be very hard for those two girls to remain as friendly for 10 years if the parents didn't get on. And I think you're not saying that your daughter is now excluding and bullying my daughter. That's not the message you're giving. You're saying, look, you know, my daughter's feeling really left out. I'm not sure if you're even aware that this seems to be happening. And yet what seems to be happening more and more now is perhaps because the two girls have phone and they're on Snapchat and whatever, you know, now my daughter doesn't feel included. Is there any way you could talk to your daughter? If the mum goes, no, absolutely not, you know, give your daughter a phone, let her be on Snapchat, you know, there's no avenue there to maybe discuss things further. But if the other mum might be really open to it and go, oh, I didn't even know, because again, you know, parents aren't always aware that that's happening in a.
But let's say you can't resolve it, and you know these two girls are doing their thing, and this daughter is being left out. How do you help that child get through that?
So you have to help her cope with the loss of her really good friend, and so that's about just being really empathetic, warm, understanding, talking with her about the loss that she's feeling, and then over time, as she comes to accept that this isn't going to shift and change, then it's about building her into new networks. So where can she make other friends, or where can she lean more on other friends that she already has, so that they become better friends, closer friends for her, so that she has an alternative to the friendship that she
and it will be painful for her. You know,
it is already painful for her, I'm sure. Already painful.
Yeah. And you have to acknowledge that you know it's really tough.
Yeah. And again, it's not easily fixed by a parent. And so another reason why we can't just be all about the fixing. Sometimes we just have to accept problems are there, and then a problem shared is a problem halved. And that's the only avenue you sometimes have as a parent, is to be the listening ear for your daughter who might be going through the grief and the trauma of the breakup.
With a little bit of time left, so I'm going to ask you this one about a four-year-old who always wants to be the bad guy, wants to play the villain, wants to be the bad guy, the evil character, and the parent wants to know, is it awful? Is it normal, rather? Is it awful?
Horrendous.
Well, obviously, the parent thinks it's awful, but is it normal?
I suppose, I don't know, in as much as I'm not sure that necessarily is a particularly big issue. I guess, you know, it'd be interesting to know what kind of stuff is he kind of watching? Yeah. That he has this affinity with the bad guys, and maybe there was a particular role or a particular character that he saw that he just felt really connected to. Again, I wouldn't be overly worried about it, in as much as he's only four, and it's all about, you know, how you connect in with him about that and the context, and then encouraging him maybe to take on some other character roles at other times.
Okay, David, thank you so much. That's David Coleman, who will be back with us in a couple of weeks. So keep the questions coming in.